The next panel is Philip Ashlock from the Open Planning Project, James Vesely from Software Freedom Law Center, and Morgan Reed, Association for Competitive Technology. Whomever would like to start, go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Morgan Reed with the Association for Competitive Technology. Thank you, Chairwoman Brewer, for having this hearing on Intro 991. A quick explanation, ACT, the association is an education and advocacy group focused on small technology-based businesses. We represent about 3,000 software developers, system integrators, IT consulting firms, e-businesses, and we generally advocate for a healthy tech environment that promotes innovation, competition, and investment. We are very active in supporting the goals presented in Intro 991, and we look forward to working with you and others to make it a reality. I think I'll vary a little from my written testimony to say that there seems to be violent agreement amongst all of us of the need for open data. We, of course, are big champions of the concept of raw data as developers. And we've written a paper recently where we discussed what we think are the three principles for what we call we government, and that's access, participation, and accountability. But I thought I'd move away from the agreement area and talk about something a little bit different, which is focusing on the developers. We've talked about this in platitudes and what the government should do, but I thought it was interesting that the gentleman from the Senate, and I thought his points were well taken, he said that the state of New York has a lot of people with time on their hands and talent. Well, I'd like to make sure that we find ways to make sure that those people don't have time on their hands, that they have jobs. And so what I'm interested in pursuing the open data element is to give them an opportunity to build applications that actually result in revenue in their pockets, that are ad-supported, or they can sell subscriptions to. They can bundle with other proprietary information from the financial industry and build applications that actually move us in a positive economic direction. So I thought it was interesting that one of the other areas that the gentleman from the Senate touched on was this concept, and he's exactly right, that there are more than just one set of customers out there. We've heard a lot of people speaking about citizens as customers. Well, my membership actually has real customers, the folks who actually pay the bills. So when I look at opportunities from the open data element, I see opportunities for our membership to sell services into other government agencies, that we can actually go into a government agency and not have to have 10 meetings with 14 roundtables that bring in two departments, but that we can go into a Department of Education and say, I'll build you an application using data from another department, and I will merge that independent of an interagency working group, an interagency funding process. I'll make it happen with your own revenue stream and give you the information you need for internal customer purposes. So I think there's this whole element of this. We want to serve customers, the broader citizenry, but I think there's an amazing opportunity to add efficiencies that gets us out of some of these elements of siloing. We all know there's this hoarding mentality that happens, and we all know that getting two agencies to work together is difficult. So I think open data presents a huge opportunity for my membership to sell services in to build platforms independent of interagency working groups, and I think that's a phenomenal opportunity for the state. I also think that one of the areas that we should focus on a little bit is what are industry best practices that we're seeing today? Where are we really seeing the rubber hit the road? Well, this has been touched on a little bit, but we all know that Chinese saying, teach a man to fish and he eats for a day. Teach a man to fish, and he eats forever. I think this debate about open government and your focus on raw data can really be broken down in that. When the government hands us a flat file of information and they throw it over the transom, it's just one fish. What we really need to do is start looking at systematically having government agencies conceive of their data in three key characteristics. It needs to have open data services built in from the ground up. It needs to be open for application services as well. In other words, I should be able to tie into the data stream, respecting security, paying attention to privacy, and immediately have access data in real time. So, and then lastly, it needs to be technology neutral. One of the elements that has been phenomenal for us is I don't know if if the chair has a Kindle, but you've heard of a Kindle, I'm sure. The Kindle technology is actually something based on a format called developed by a company called MobiPocket, which was an ACT member. Now, we all love open standards, and we love standards activities, and we love the process, so to speak, that takes place going through standards activities. But really, the cutting edge of innovation often happens apart from standards. It's from the guys who don't have the money to fly to Geneva to sit down in a meeting with 14 lawyers. It's a company like MobiPocket that says, we know how to deliver a format on a mobile device this size, or this size, or this size, and we're going to put it in the marketplace, and we're going to see if the real customers, the citizens, find it acceptable. So I want to make sure that as government develops technology and puts it out into the marketplace, that it does so in a technology-neutral way that allows us to build on top of it. And that may mean that we're going to take it in a direction no one's ever thought of. So I think there's a couple of ways that we can also look at what the big players are doing.
Let me just summarize a little bit. Okay.
We should take a quick look at what the big players are doing, and I think there's some guidance there. In the large players, such as Google, we know, Amazon has their web services, and Microsoft has what's called their Open Government Data Initiative, or OGDI. I'm going to take a moment to touch on OGDI because it's been one that we've heard a lot of developers talk about. This is a product from Microsoft, of all things, and it's platform neutral and open source. What it does is it's actually an operating system that Microsoft has made available so that you can store data there and take it out in real time. And yet my members who don't use Microsoft products can access the technology on it. It's available to be reached out to through Adobe Flash, Silverlight, JavaScript, PHP, Python, Ruby, you name it. I can get access to it. So it's interesting to see that even the big players, even the big proprietary players, are seeing opportunities to provide data in this format. So ultimately, I think we know that from the developer's perspective, we agree it's got to be raw. We want to see it tech neutral, and we want to see it built from the ground up with the concept that I'm going to provide this in real time and look for ways to make it interagency operable. And with that, I would say that all of our recommendations fit very much in line with what the bill has in place. Thank you very much.
Next.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Brewer. Thank you for this opportunity to speak today. My name is James Azeel, and I am legal counsel for the Software Freedom Law Center. The center is based here in New York, and we're a nonpartisan, nonprofit legal services organization whose mission is to provide pro bono legal representation to those who make technologies that promote free communication and innovation. This bill makes government data available to New Yorkers in two different ways. The first is the web portal, and we've all talked about that, but the most important thing is the raw data, and everyone has sort of been focused on that, and I am going to be focused on it as well. The exciting thing about giving New Yorkers raw data is not just about the city giving up its data and the city being transparent and the city being sharing things with people. It's about what we can do with that data once we get our hands on it. And the amazing thing is that we have no idea what people are going to do with the raw data once we give it to them. We have no idea what their needs are, and certainly not as much of an idea as they have themselves. There are so many different ways we can use this data that we haven't even thought of yet, that we will only discover once we actually hand it to people and see what they come up with. And the only way to do that is by giving them the raw data. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the kinds of things people might do, because just to show sort of the exciting possibility that exists there, and then talk a little bit about who they are and why they're going to do these things. So if we give people this data and they can combine data from consumer affairs, the police department, the health department, sanitation, and take all that government data and combine it with non-government data that's available from other sources on the internet, including proprietary sources of data, we're going to start getting services that allow us to answer questions like, where is the nearest place I can park without having to wake up for alternate side tomorrow? And that might sound like a trivial thing, but that's a huge deal in the lives of a lot of New Yorkers. I mean, the number of people who have to plan their lives around Mondays and Thursday mornings so that they can be near their car is quite large. You can answer questions like, which restaurant in my neighborhood has both great reviews and a good health record, right? And that's something you can't do just from government data. And ideally, you want to do it right in the place where you're already looking for your restaurant reviews. You don't want to have to go to a government web portal to find out this information. You want that information already out there, already in the service you're already using at Yelp.com or Yahoo or Sidewalk or whatever place you're going to find a restaurant review. You want that information already there. You don't want to have to take a second break from what you're doing to try to find the data somewhere else. The other thing this can do, in addition to just sort of daily lifestyle stuff, is help businesses plan their mode of operation in the city, right? If you could answer the question, where should I put my electronics store, said it has the least competition and the most foot traffic.
That's the analogy I like the best. Go ahead.
That question of where I should put my business and how I should structure my business to get the most out of city data and city life is really important. And you're not going to get that just from the city. Someone at a city desk is going to magically wake up one day and say, you know what I think the public needs? I think the public needs to know where there's a lot of foot traffic and little competition for electronic stores. The fact is, that's a very specific kind of demand, and it's the kind of demand that people have for themselves. They wake up one day, realize they need it, and they need a way to answer that question. The city is never going to provide people with a way to answer that question. If the city creates a web portal, it is not going to go that deep. It is not going to get that niche that people will be able to answer that specific a question. But that specific question is exactly what people need answered. And that's why we need the raw data. The last example I'd like to give is somebody either looking for an apartment or looking to sell an apartment. It would be really useful to find out average prices of apartments similar to the one you're looking for within a certain block radius or something like that. And that's an extremely specialized application. And we can sort of imagine the city doing that at some point, but we could also imagine the real estate market doing that for the city and for consumers at no cost to the public, which I think would be a better win for the city in terms of how it spends its dollars. So the reason to put all these things online is that we can't predict what people are going to do with it. And even if we could predict what people were going to do with it, we would never get down into the weeds, into the details, to satisfy everybody's smaller needs. And I'd like to just give sort of three examples of how the public uses this information currently and what they do with it. And these are three really good examples of how volunteers have stepped up to organize government data and present it to other people. So there is a web service called EDGAR. And EDGAR is a database of SEC filings. What some people don't know is that EDGAR, which is tremendously useful to the financial and legal services organizations, especially in New York, is that EDGAR was started by a volunteer. There was a guy named Carl Malamud who just started putting SEC filings online. He decided that this was information the public should have, and he was going to share it with them. And nobody knew at the time how crucial this information was. Nobody knew how useful it was and how vital to the daily business lives of so many companies this information would be. And he ran it for 2 years just for free because this is what he wanted to do. And he kept saying to the SEC, hey, I'm doing your job for you. I'm giving people this information that you should be giving them. And the SEC said, well, thank you. Keep on doing it. And he said, you should be doing this. And at some point, he decided that he had had enough, that he couldn't just keep on running this service. So he put a notice out to all his customers, or his users, rather. He said, I'm turning it off. If you want this service to continue, call the SEC. And so many people sprang up and called the SEC and said, hey, no, wait, we actually do need this information. We use this information every day, that 10 years later, this website is still running. People are still using this information. So it turns out that people need this information. Other people want to give it to them, but all they need is a little bit of help from the government to give them the data and enable them to take that first step. The second example is an example of something that failed. I have a colleague who had trouble finding schedules for bus service to his Windsor Terrace neighborhood. He tried to write a computer program to grab the data from a city website and send it to people's cell phones on demand. This is a service that I think a lot of people would use because I don't actually know the bus schedule in many neighborhoods. And when I do arrive, I have no idea whether I'm going to be able to get a bus or not. And he was able to find bus service information online, but he was only able to find it in PDF format. He couldn't find it in a standard format that was capable of being processed automatically. So he couldn't just have a computer program grab the bus schedule every day and send it to whoever wanted it on demand. If he had been able to do that, every single one of us would be able to access that data right now from our cell phones whenever we wanted it. Even if we don't know we need it in advance, We could have found it and used it. So that's a really powerful example to me of how the difference between that service existing and that service not existing is the availability of the raw data in a process that lets it be automatically in a format that lets it be automatically processed. And the last thing that I'd like to talk about in terms of an example is a website called RideTheCity.com. There were two people who met as students of urban planning at NYU. They formed this website called Ride the City. You enter your address. You enter a destination address. It tells you the best way to get from point A to point B that is safest for bicycles. And the way it does this is by finding streets that have bicycle routes on them, which is really easy information to get. But what would make this website be even more useful and more accurate is if they could take into account bicycle accident statistics. So they could actually tell you which streets really are more safe, not just which streets might be more safe because they have bicycle routes. So these are three really good examples of how we take government data and use it in new and innovative ways that, frankly, I don't see the city coming up with any of these services anytime soon, even if we did get a web portal to allow us to do it. So I think the last thing I would like to address is the issue of cost. Now, we had a gentleman from the city earlier. He testified that reducing call center volume by 10% would save the city some $4 million. And I presume he was talking about 311 call center volume. Now, 50% of 311 calls are simple requests for information answered from a database of 6,000 entries, 6,000 little facts that most people call about. If this bill were to cause those 6,000 entries to be released, we can turn every computer in New York into a 311 service center and save the city the cost of a large percentage of 311 calls. And the other thing I'd like to address is he kept mentioning NYC Big Apps, which sounds like a great program. And I just wanted to say that in order to implement NYC Big Apps, they must be aggregating quite a lot of data. And what I'd like to see is that data, because they've already decided that is worth the cost of aggregating. So every piece of data they're putting into NYC Big Apps, we should have. Frankly, if they gave us the data, we would build NYC Big Apps for them. We'll build what we need, and we won't have to wait for the city to detect and fill our needs. NYC Big Apps sounds like a great way to help New Yorkers, but if you give us the data, we can help ourselves. I would suggest that we get the data, and we get the software code behind NYC Big Apps, and we will see exactly what people can do once you give them the ability to help themselves. So thank you, Councilperson Brewer, for your time and allowing me to...
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Philip Ashlock. I am from a nonprofit organization here in the city called the Open Planning Project. And Councilwoman Brewer, I'd like to thank you for inviting me here and for proposing this legislation. I'm going to keep my comments short because most of my points have already been made by others, and it's running late in the evening or in the afternoon, and I would like to get back to Personal Democracy Forum. The Open Planning Project is a nonprofit that builds open source tools to facilitate civic participation and improve civic life in general. We've also tried to make a point of finding models in other cities that have been successful for different, you know, technology or livability issues and try and propose them in places like New York. One thing that we've been doing recently is looking at all the different instances of 311 services in other cities and by private organizations and companies, and have been creating what this legislation would refer to as a volunteer consensus body around Open 311. It's open311.org, which we just set up. One point I would like to make about the use of the word open, since it's so open, vague, is that there's really sort of two parts to openness. There's transparency and there's participation. In developers' terms, that's read-write. What's really interesting about the Big Apps project that's been proposed is that it's modeled on the Apps for Democracy contest that's been held in Washington, D.C. And there has actually been two of these Apps for Democracy contests. The first one was held last year, and it was solely a read-only model where it was using existing data to sort of prove the importance of transparency. But they are currently holding another one, which actually ends in 2 days, based around Washington, D.C.'s Open 311 API. Now, that's a read-write API, so it's transparent and it's participatory, which means that citizens not only can see the information that's been put into that system, but they can also add it to that system on their own. So that's one point I would like to make about the meaning of openness. And otherwise, I think I'm just going to run through some brief examples of how we've encountered open data in city agencies. I was actually asked to come here based on some experience at our organization and experience some of my colleagues have had actually outside of the organization and within the organization dealing with the MTA. Now, I understand that the MTA is not necessarily under the purview of the city, but I think that the experience was representative of other agencies. And so just to give you some background of how MTA scheduling data is made available, as it was just brought up, the usefulness of that. Currently, there's only two places that I know of where, say, bus schedule information can be received in an electronic, web-based application, and that is MTA.info and Google Maps. The way Google Maps gets this information, and the same way anyone else would get this information, is by contacting the MTA, and they would provide a compact disk of the data. And the reason they provide a compact disk is it helps them track that information in which agency has or which organization or private entity has received that data. And I don't completely understand the reason for their needs to track that data, but that is why they do that. Because it's on a compact disk and not in an automatic networked delivery system, like over the internet with a feed, that request has to be remade each time any schedule change has been made. Consequently, whenever the MTA changes the schedule, Google has to submit another request for a compact disk. And then, they receive that compact disk, they have to translate it into another form. And if you look for schedule information on Google Maps, it usually takes at least a week or so, a week or two, for it to come back up to date. So that is one good argument for providing an automatic structured format. Another is just a very simple example of accessing 311 data. It is actually possible in an automated way to get 311 data that's been submitted to the system, except for the fact that they provide they put a firewall, I guess you could call it, to accessing that data through a CAPTCHA, which is a typical way of preventing spam from getting in a form. Do you know what a CAPTCHA is? Okay. Now, CAPTCHAs are typically only used to prevent spam from malicious data being written onto a server. But they're using a CAPTCHA specifically to prevent you from from reading the data in an automated way. There's nothing malicious you can do there. They're allowing a human to read it, just not a machine. And another piece of information that I actually don't have very many details about is the NYPD, I believe, used to provide crash stat data. And I could be wrong about this, but I've been told that they no longer provide that. So these are three cases where there is data that is available in an automated electronic way, but there are intentional means of preventing that from being available to the public. And I think that's just to keep it short, I'll leave it at that.
First of all, those three fantastic examples and three fantastic testimonies. And I appreciate it because it will help us as we try to negotiate this bill, and it will help us to explain to the public, because I think people don't understand. I think what bothered me the most when the administrative testimony is that thinking that the public knows what they want. The public can only be empowered if they have the data to use in a way that you all described. I mean, there's so little understanding of government unless you really need government, and then you do find it helpful, hopefully, but it would be great for us to empower people to use government in a different way, as you described. And I think that's what the glory of the internet is, and that's what we should be using. Are there any specific comments you have on our bill that you would change in any way? That would be the only other question I have. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have one, which is, I guess, in response to the representatives of the administration who were commenting on the 3 billion pages of archived documents that would need to be scanned, which is that it does take a lot of time to scan documents, but there are a plethora of institutions, not just in the New York area, but all over the country, that would love to help contribute to that effort. If there was someone from the city, you know, to make sure that, you know, there was nothing sensitive that was being digitized. And archive.org is a perfect example of that, and they have a very sophisticated, refined way of scanning documents in a very quick way. So I would suggest that if it would help alleviate those concerns, and it did take, you know, past, say, the 2013 deadline to convert those 6 billion pages, that if each agency was continuously in the process of achieving that goal past the deadline, that there would not be a penalty. That if they were you know, being provided with every means to help achieve that goal, then I think that would still fit under the compliance. That should fit under the compliance.
I mean, certainly we played with the deadlines, and we were really clear: issues that are easy to deal with, low hanging fruit, go now, and then work on some that are more complicated. And we were really clear in the legislation. Any other comments about the bill? Go
ahead. The only other thing that I would like to have seen in the bill would have been a clear statement as to the lack of assertion of any copyright over the data that comes out of this process. Right now in San Francisco, there's a bit of an argument over who has the right to publish Muni arrival and departure times. A company was hired to process some data for the city and provide the public with this information, and they're quite upset that the public is now using that information and publishing it and chopping it up and managing it for themselves. What I would like to see is an avoidance of that argument here in New York to make it really clear that the city is neither asserting any control over this data or going to permit anyone else to assert control over this data.
The issue is, of course, the public will see the original document because that's always there. So you can always see what that was, and if it's changed, the public can see the original document.
Right.
To me, that would be pretty clear.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much for your testimony, and enjoy the rest of Andrew Wachet's conference.
Thank you.